Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome in to the Friday edition of Robbie and Rexrode. I'm Joe Rexrode here. Robbie is out today, and we are very pleased, Michelle and I, very pleased to be joined by Adam Vingan. Hello, Adam.
Hi, everybody.
How are you?
Tired.
Yeah?
Yes.
This is a little bit of a change for you.
Well, I got used to it when I sat in for Robbie last month, I think it was. And I'm used to getting up, as I've discussed, ad nauseum because I'm a young dad. I just feel bad for my wife who doesn't have to work today. The baby's already awake. I think he woke up with my alarm. So, sorry, Bridget.
Well, that's okay. So Bridget and Arlo can listen to the show. That's actually kind of exciting, right?
I'm not sure how much interest Bridget would have in that. Arlo likes to hear the sound of my voice, which hopefully everybody else in Nashville at 6 a.m. likes to hear the sound of my voice.
Yes. Michelle, how are you?
Doing good, and I'm still not used to this wake-up call, so I don't know how you got used to it for a week, Adam. Over a year and a half? Nope, not used to it. Every morning I'm like, here we go.
Yeah, I'm kind of weirdly, I don't know, used to it now. Like, I kind of...
Well, I shoot myself in the foot, because I go to bed at 11.
Yeah.
So that does not help.
Sometimes I do that too, but yeah.
Well, that's your problem.
You got to mix in some nines in there.
I'm in bed by 8. I'm in bed by 8 now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Because of Arlo?
Yeah.
It's amazing what a young person will do on that front. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, please hit us up on our phone text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. I did that off the top of my head. Let's start today with what I think will be probably discussed a lot today all around, which, by the way, I failed to put the TVs on before the show started. One of many things I'll fail at today. But the Tua Tagovailoa situation, for anybody who didn't see it, first of all, I think a hit that should have been flagged, by the way. I mean, he got slammed down on his head. But regardless, a really frightening sight last night. Tua gets thrown to the turf. He's down. He tenses up. They cart him off. I mean, he's fine in terms of extremities and everything. He was released from the hospital. But in the meantime, there was already discussion going about concussion protocol and exactly how the NFL and the Miami Dolphins proceeded Sunday when he went down against the Bills, got up and just sort of wobbled, looked like a boxer in the ring, wobbling, falling down. He gets back up. He comes back in the game. And then, it's like, certainly he won't be playing in this game, right? And he did, and there's some really scary stuff, first of all, when it comes to, concussions, a second concussion shortly after, a second significant concussion after a first. And I'm trying to remember the exact term for that. But regardless, Chris Nowinski, if anybody's familiar with him, this is a guy who, former football player, is the CEO of Concussion LF.
Former professional wrestler, did you know that?
Yeah, that's right. WWE superstar,
yes.
In fact, on his bio. A neuroscientist, and he's been probably right at the forefront of, CTE study and concussions and the need for more safety and things like this. So he tweeted before the game, okay? This is before the game. If Tua takes the field tonight, it's a massive step back for concussion care in the NFL. If he has a second concussion that destroys his season or career, everyone involved will be sued and should lose their jobs, coaches included. We all saw it. Even they must know this isn't right. And then, of course, what happened. So now the Dolphins, You know, Mike McCarthy came out, or Mike McDaniel said, you know, he doesn't have anything more serious than a concussion. He said he was asked flat out, like, are you positive that Sunday was not a concussion? He said yes. And, you know, this, of course, included, and this is where I think this is an important point here, because the NFLPA will be involved. I mean, lawyers will be involved. This is going to be a thing. But this is also where, and Charles Robinson tweeted this, and I agree, the player input on this is a big problem. I mean, I know it's like, well, how the heck do you not have player input on their own selves? But see, this is what can happen. You can't tell me that, like, Tua was out there against his will, or that he went back against his will Sunday, right? This is the culture of, well, you must be good. I'm going to be tough and suck it up and get out there. And look, I've talked to football players, college football players, who have intentionally answered slowly on these tests before, because you have to compare your test to your test when you weren't concussed, and have intentionally answered so slowly that if they were concussed, they can still go back in the game. I mean, that's real. And yeah, it's just, and this is, if this was two straight serious concussions, and I don't know that it was, it looks that way, but if it was, that's extremely dangerous.
Second impact syndrome.
Thank you. Second impact syndrome.
In isolation, what happened last night was incredibly terrifying. As you mentioned, he goes down, and I believe it's called the fencing position, the way that his hands and arms were, which is a telltale sign of a traumatic brain injury. But when you consider what happened on Sunday, when he was playing against the Bills and clearly was, you know, knocked for a loop, to put it lightly.
They said back.
Yeah,
said
which back seems injury. Which seems odd. It, you know, no pun intended, something fishy about this whole thing with the Miami Dolphins, and Mike McDaniel was adamant last night again that he didn't have a concussion on Sunday and that he wouldn't have put him in the game and put him in danger if it was the case. But I don't know how you can watch what happened on Sunday and watch what happened last night and not see, you know, clearly that Tua was concussed in some form or fashion.
Well, he was concussed last night.
He was definitely concussed last night, but it was, when you look at Sunday, I mean, I don't know. I am not a doctor. You know, my dad is a doctor, but I did not inherit any of his, you know, intelligence.
Doctoring?
Yes, his intelligence, especially when it comes to medical things. But I've never seen a back injury cause someone to, you know, fall over themselves after being hit on the field. So, you know, it is terrible. And, of course, you know, I mean, even the idea that he went home with them seems a bit, you know, dangerous. I'm sure flying right after something like that is not ideal. But he was discharged from the hospital, and he went back to Miami with the team. So that's something, you know, that's also interesting. But as you said, there's already an investigation going on with what happened on Sunday. That now it even takes on greater importance because of what happened last night. And from a purely football standpoint, which, of course, is not the most important thing here. But the Dolphins, I guess you could say, although they did lose, are fortunate that they have a backup quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater who has extensive starting experience. So if Tua, presumably, is out for a significant period of time, they have someone in Teddy Bridgewater that can at least, you know, hold things down. You know, he filled in for Drew Brees in New Orleans a few years ago and I think went either 5-0 or 6-0. Though I can say definitively as a Saints fan that I never saw Teddy Bridgewater throw a pass like he did to Tyreek Hill last night, which traveled 64 yards. I wish I had seen that in the Saints uniform. But nonetheless, it's just incredibly unfortunate what happened to Tua. And I'm scared for him. I mean, like I said, if this was the first thing we knew about, if this was the first injury, it was already scary enough. But the fact that he suffered, presumably again, a concussion less than a week ago, I mean, I really hope he's okay, but it, you know, I would not be surprised if he's out for a significant period of time.
Yeah, no, and I'm scared for him too, and I agree that it was a little bit surprising to hear. Oh yeah, he's out and he's gone and back home. I'm going to read real quick this from Charles wrote a column about this, kind of along the lines of what I just said. he's talking about the union in this situation. So, quote, this is why it's questionable letting players take a big part in their own medical diagnosis, especially when they look like they've been concussed. There's evidence they will lie. There's evidence they will obfuscate. There's evidence they'll choose to lean into a team that wants them back on the field. And they're smart enough to know how to make that happen when they're asked to take part in a decision about getting back on the field. The union knows all this from experience. Its knowledge is gained from a history of the NFL and its teams botching the handling of concussions, not to mention a seemingly inexhaustible omerta, code of silence, among players that some readily admitted their most honest and raw moments. That says you do what you have to do to stay in the fight, especially when it's a meaningful one. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit last night, he's being a gamer. I mean, that's – and look, I understand that, but – in fact, Andrew Whitworth last night on Amazon, which, by the way, the Amazon broadcast, you know, very carrying water feel at halftime, not even touching the concussion stuff at all, you know, which was pretty weak.
But I did not watch it, but I saw a lot of reaction to it on Twitter, and it was not kind to how they handled it.
I will say that post-game they did, and they, I mean, I think they made up for it. And here's what Andrew Whitworth said on that show. He said, quote, I can literally remember playing the Philadelphia Eagles on a Thursday night, getting concussed, wobbling around. A referee actually removed me from the game. I go back in the game because you want to play. I was able to get myself through the test, explain that I'm fine, knowing I was doing pretty good. I had a team that was like, man, this guy is just not right. I don't feel right letting him keep playing. He pulled me out of the game, and I'm so thankful for that. Anyway, he's talking about the memories. Like, so basically, one of his teammates saved him from himself. But that's what like, these guys have to be saved from themselves sometimes, and I think that's the situation with Tua. So now NFLPA investigation, and this will go on and on and on. It's, you know, this is, I think this has got to be another moment. You know, I think the CTE and concussion stuff has kind of, you know, gone to the back burner, but I think there's also a lot of things that are in place that have made the game safer, which is good. I mean, we want the game to continue. You want it to be safer. It has to be safer to continue. This has got to be an important moment where there's just got to be stronger decisions made when anything looks remotely like it could be that. And again, players being saved from themselves. I mean, that's something that you got to keep in mind in these situations.
Yeah, it's an archaic way of thinking, as you mentioned, with Kirk Herbstreit saying he's a gamer. It's just this very old-fashioned, rub some dirt on it, you know, toughness, you know, being associated with, you know, playing through injury. And look, players play through injury all the time, but one, it's different if you're playing through a broken finger that's taped versus a head injury, which can have a detrimental effect on your life far after you're done playing. We have plenty of examples across all sports of athletes who are dead or in dire straits because of their inability to protect themselves or the inability of the leagues to protect them from themselves when they suffer these injuries, because they feel like if they take themselves out, they're not tough, they're not valuable. And I feel like that way of thinking has fallen a little bit, but it's still there. It's still pervasive, and that's a problem.
Well, and Tua in particular. Tua's toughness in particular has been questioned in the last couple of years with different injuries he's had and stuff like that. This is a prove-it year for Tua.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, you have to take that into account in the situation as well. So hopefully he's okay. That's the main thing. And then from this, there's going to be some repercussions. When we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, we're going to get into Titans Colts. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Hey, everybody, you know it's Preds Game Day, brought to you by Social Furniture. Shop today to get rewarded with Social Cash Back. Buy a $1,000, get $125 cash back on your Social Furniture gift card. Shop local, shop social in West Nashville. Welcome back, Robbie Rexo, 102.5, 106.3, the game, and the Game Nashville app. Also like to let you know that you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We're going to pivot to Titans-Colts and Vingan. Actually, would you like me? I call you Vingan in real life. Like when we just hang out, like I call you Vingan. I don't know. Should I call him Vingan on the show? Is that confusing? Or should I actually call you Adam?
You can do whatever you'd like. You've known me long enough that you can tell me or you can call me whatever you'd like.
Hello, we call you Rex Road.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Right. Like, so why not? Yeah.
I do find it interesting Michelle
today
calls.
Today is Vingan and Rex Road.
I do find it interesting that Michelle calls Robbie Rob, because I don't know anyone who calls him Rob.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was just thinking about that the other day. Like, Michelle, you're the only person who calls him Rob.
Wait, really?
I think so. I mean, everybody calls him Robbie. You call him Rob.
I feel like I shorten everybody's names, and I probably should get permission. Well, Robbie.
Hey, whatever. I mean, he hasn't complained about it, so, you know, it's fine. I mean, I want people to call me Joey, but nobody does, you know?
Okay, Joey.
That's what my whole family still calls me. Like, they also call me Joey. Yeah. But I was mad as a kid being called Joey because it sounded like a little kid, so I'm like, call me Joe. But now I'm like, no, call me Joey because, right?
That's me with Shelly.
Because I'm old.
I can't call
Shelly.
You. I can't call you Joey. That just, something seems weird about that. Joey's, like, if I knew you when you were, like, 8 years old. Then
Joey.
Maybe Joey, yeah. But not now. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's going to be Joe.
That's fine.
Or Rex Road.
I'm just saying, if anybody wants to call me Joey, I welcome that.
Vingan is fine.
So Vingan, Titans-Colts.
Yes.
And we're going to get into that a lot today, of course. But, you know, my first thing that comes to mind in getting into this a little bit, and by the way, Preds game day, I mentioned that. We're gonna talk some Preds here soon. They had a game last night, a preseason game, but Titans-Colts, do you think Titans fans actually have confidence? I think about just 2 years ago, they lost at home, and Ryan Porth was just – he spent like a week explaining why he has no confidence. They'll never beat the Colts. They can't see it. And then it came true. I was like, no, they're going to beat the Colts. And then they had like the punting fiasco and all this stuff, and they lost at home again. As they had lost, you know, they'd lost quite a few games, I think, at least a few games at home. They'd lost most of the time against the Colts at that point. And he was like, I just will never believe the Titans are going to win that game. Well, they're going for a fourth straight win in Indy now. Do you think Titans fans like have more confidence for this game now?
That's a good question. And look, this game does not have as much juice to it as we thought it would when we were looking at the schedule at the start of the season, because you have a 1-2 Titans team and a 1-1-1, is that right? Colts team?
That is right.
That tie is going to throw things for a loop at the end of the season. That tie is going to come into play in determining who wins the AFC South. Ties are the worst. I still remember, was it Donovan McNabb several years ago after the Eagles tied, or maybe it was with the Washington football team, where he didn't realize that there were ties in the NFL?
Oh, yes, right.
So ties always throw things into disarray. But you know what's interesting? I would actually feel, if I was a Titans fan, I would actually feel worse about this game had the Colts lost to the Chiefs last week. If the Colts would have gotten their doors blown off by the Chiefs last week, and that was their home opener, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
right?
They'd be 0-2-1.
Right. I would feel a little more nervous if I were a Titans fan, because the Colts would have to win that game. Now, I'm not saying they don't have to win this game. It's an important game. But for some reason, I see them beat the Chiefs, and it was a tight game. But the fact that the Colts won against a far superior opponent and got off their schneid and you know, made up for that terrible, terrible loss to Jacksonville, I feel a little bit. I would feel a little bit better. I don't know why. Is that odd?
I think that you may be right, but. The other side of that is they got confidence. They actually saw themselves doing some good football things, like playing some winning football. They put it on the field, you know? So I think there's value in that too. I mean, I think desperation is important. I think the difference though is that also they have desperation with the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that this week. I mean, Jim Irsay's out there like, you know, look at yourself in the mirror, you know, like beat the Titans. I mean, he's losing his mind. He's going Jerry Jones on this situation. They're all talking about it. They know. They've been told a million times this week that you've lost three straight games in this building to the Titans, a place where they never used to win. So I think that replaces the desperation you're talking about.
I think that's fair. And Bill Barnwell of ESPN wrote a story the other day, looking at a couple of teams and wondering if there were reasons for panic. And he talked about the Colts and their offense, because according to him, they are the least efficient offense in the league through 3 weeks, according to Football Outsiders DVOA, which is a statistic that measures a team's efficiency by comparing success on every single play to league average based on situation and opponent.
Yeah, DVOA is a very good. Very good stat.
According to Bill Barnwell, Frank Reich's offense ranks 32nd in DVOA through 3 weeks, and some of that is. The Matt Ryan hasn't had a full complement of receivers. I think he missed both Michael Pittman
and
Alec Pierce through 3 weeks.
Not all the games, but they definitely both missed.
They missed the Jacksonville
game. Yes.
But they have not been available for every game.
Right.
And Pittman is, in my opinion, and you would know better than me, I would say he's a borderline, like, true number one receiver if he's fully healthy. But
he's a good player.
But their depth at receiver is incredibly thin, and Jonathan Taylor, I feel like, has been okay. He so far this season, but with the talent that he has, he can break a huge game at any moment. But I think so far the Colts have they've stumbled along offensively, and not to say that the Titans haven't, because they've had their issues too. But I think the fact that the Colts offense does appear out of sync, I think bodes well for the Titans. Like you said, they're motivated. The Colts saw themselves do good things. So maybe that gets their efficiency up offensively. But I do think, despite the Titans' challenges on offense through 3 weeks, I think the Colts have been worse, and I think that bodes well for the Titans, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. I do think, in two of those three games, I mean, they should have lost the game to the Texans. Matt Ryan, actually, that's where, I mean, Jonathan Taylor, he's had a good season so far, but you're right, he hasn't been great.
I think that was his best game, wasn't it, the first game?
I mean, he really drove the comeback and had especially one series where he just completely took over the game. It's like, yes, do that, give him the ball. But Matt Ryan made big throws late in that game. He made big throws late in the last game. I mean, two or three games, Matt Ryan has, despite a lot of ugly possessions, which count and contribute to the DVOA you're talking about, he has made plays late. So I think that's worth keeping in mind. I think pass rush is – I mean, both teams, their offensive line, if one team's offensive line – considerably outplays the other, then I think I like that team a lot in this game. I mean, the Colts offensive line has been really bad.
But they were expected to be good, weren't they? Like, they had, like, one of the quote-unquote best offensive lines in the league over the past couple of years?
They have the most expensive offensive line. They have a couple great players in Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson inside, but the tackle's been a problem. Left tackle's been a problem. And, they drafted Bernard Raymond out of Central Michigan. He's banged up. So, like, right now, they're kind of a mess. And Ryan Kelly hurt. But by the way, the Wednesday injury report that looked, I guess, probably better for the Titans, Stephon Gilmore hamstring, Ryan Kelly knee, Yannick Ngakoue back, Jonathan Taylor toe, all of them went from DNP Wednesday to full Thursday. So that was one of those, take Wednesday off, right?
And that was the first time that Jonathan Taylor ever missed practice, I heard.
Yeah, going back to high school, which is a heck of a stat. Yes, that's pretty amazing. Now, DeForest Buckner for the Colts. Elbow, again, 2 days in a row, has not practiced. So, of course, today is the day that you get the final injury report, the designations for the game. He is a big deal, obviously, in this game when it comes to Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
On the Titans side of things, I do wonder, Bud Dupree goes from full to limited with a hip. Does that mean it was just planned? Could be. Huge thing to watch today. If there's one player on this massive injury report for the Titans who is key, it's Bud Dupree being able to play. But Fulton is a full participant yesterday. You get Austin Hooper upgraded to limited with his neck. Another big deal. I don't expect Zach Cunningham to be out there with the elbow. I think Joe Schobert, they signed him, is going to play. Amani Hooker, concussion. Speaking of concussions, did not practice Wednesday, did not practice Thursday. Huge thing to look for today. I mean, like there's a big drop-off. At safety, from those starting safeties, they're right around the top group of starting safeties in the league. Big drop off if they don't have him.
Yeah, and the Titans escaped with the victory against the Raiders on Sunday. All due respect to Mac Hollins, but as I was watching that game, I thought he was a rookie. I was like, I've never heard of this guy. Apparently, he's been in the league for like 6 years. Like, I remember because I was at that game and I was looking at the game sheet and I was like, Mac Hollins. I think it was Mac Hollins. He had the catch at the end of the game, right, to set up the 2-point conversion.
Oh yeah, yeah, Mac Hollins. I thought you just said Matt Collins. No. I'm like, dude,
Mac,
what is going on?
Mac,
yes,
Hollins. You know, and you know, like, you know, the Titans, you know, were able to do just enough. They did enough in the first half to have enough points to hold off the Raiders in the second half. But yeah, you know, their secondary is in trouble for sure, especially with what's going on with Caleb Farley, which I know you've talked about at length.
Yeah, and we'll get into that later too, and more on this. I want to get into some hockey stuff with Vingan, but first of all, Michelle, you have a word from Superbook.
Yes, I do, Joe. From Nashville to Knoxville and all around the country, Superbook Sports is your place to wager this football season. We got a little early action at 8:30 a.m. because they are in London, Vikings Saints. I'm taking the Vikings minus the 2.5. Sorry for that one, Vingan. But the Saints, they've been pretty much a disappointment this year. And if you want to take a look locally, Tennessee is heading up to Indy. Mike Vrabel's trying to get his fourth straight win. I'm taking Tennessee plus the 4. And you don't need to be at the game to enjoy football this season. Download the Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com. Start placing your bets now. Right now, Superbook has lines up for every pro game for the rest of the season, plus which team will win the title, who's your MVP, I like Lamar Jackson, and who will surprise in the SEC. Wager on all that and more right now at Superbook Sports, along with football. Superbook also accepts wagers on every other major sport, about to start getting into hockey soon. So bring Vegas to the palm of your hands, and now Superbook will match 100% of your first bet up to $1,000, no matter if the bet wins or loses. So get in on the action right now with Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Welcome
back in, Robbie and Rex Show, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, 102.5, 106.3, the game and the game in Nashville app. We're going to switch to some hockey here with Vingan in the house. And first of all, Vingan, before I start asking you some peppering you with Preds questions, tell the listeners a little bit about what you're going to be doing this year. You are going to be very hockey involved this year.
Yes, I've already started, but it's still early. I will be working with Sportsnet, writing data-driven stories powered by SportLogic. That was a lot of jargon. But basically, what I will be doing is I will be writing a lot of analytics for Sportsnet.ca. Of course, a Canadian outlet, a rights holder up there in our hat, America's hat, Canada. So yeah, really excited about it. A lot of it is going to be, as you might expect, Canadian based. So I've already written a story about the Calgary Flames, already written a story about the Ottawa Senators. You know, we'll be writing a lot about the Canadian teams, but we'll have the opportunity to branch out if a story presents itself. So really excited about that. Keep an eye out on sportsnet.ca for that kind of stuff.
Love it. And, I like you said, I mean, you're in those Canadian teams. Oh, God, everybody loves the Canadian teams in Canada, don't they? But down here, I think there's a chance that the Nashville Predators are pretty good this year. I feel like, mm-hmm. First of all, I feel like the general consensus is much different now than it was a year ago on the Preds. Now, some people were a little more optimistic a year ago for the Preds and pick them to make the playoffs, but not many. And I feel like for the most part, they're viewed as a playoff team. They look like a playoff team. I mean, look, when you add Ryan McDonagh and Nino Niederreiter to basically the same team, then and you consider the possibility of some of these young guys getting better. You know, I mean, I think there's cause for some optimism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much optimism? There's where I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think it's possible that the Preds, and again, this is like best case scenario on a lot of fronts, but do you think it's possible the Preds could be the second best team in the West? We know who the best team is.
Yes. The Seattle Kraken.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. The Colorado Avalanche, of course. Do I think, best case scenario, they could be the second best team in the Western Conference? As you said, I think a lot would have to go right. And I think the one thing that a lot of people are going to be watching for with this team is how much regression is there from certain players? Because we talked about this a lot when the season ended, about how they had two 40-goal scorers, the first time they ever had 40-goal scorers. They had a 96-point defenseman. They had a 24-goal rookie in Tanner Jeannot. They had a Vezina Trophy finalist in UC Saros start 67 games. There a lot went right for this team, and they still squeaked into the playoffs and were completely decimated by a far superior team in the first round. So there is going to be, I think, some concern, and understandably so, about how much of that regression takes hold. You know, I think some players are better equipped to mitigate that than others. For example, no one expects Roman Josi to have another 96-point season. It had been 3 decades since a defenseman had 90 points in an NHL season. But I think Roman Josi, even if he has 80 points, is still going to have a really good season.
That'd be good.
I'm not concerned about that. I think there are aspects of Matt Duchene's game that suggest that what he did last year is sustainable. But, you know, will he be able to score at that rate? And the same thing goes for Philip Forsberg. Now, there are players I'm definitely expecting to regress, namely Ryan Johansson, who had, I think, 26 goals last year. He definitely had the most goals in a season with the Predators and had a ridiculous shooting percentage that was far off of his career average. I do not expect Ryan Johansson to have as many goals last season as he did. I don't expect Ryan Johansson to have as many goals this season as he did last season. There, I finally spit it out.
And it was 26.
So there is definitely going to be some regression. So to answer your question, do I think they could be the second best team in the Western Conference? I think pretty much everything has to break their way. When I look at the divisions in the Western Conference, when I look at the conference as a whole, there are a couple of teams that stand out to me that I think, you know, are probably better positioned to be that second best team than the Predators. I think the Calgary Flames are one of those teams. They lost Johnny Gaudreau and they lost Matthew Tkachuk, but they replaced them with Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri. It's not a perfect comparison, but they pretty much made up the points they lost in Tkachuk and Gaudreau and bringing in Huberdeau and Kadri,
which is wild.
Yeah,
but they did it.
And I think the addition in that trade as well, that Panthers Flames trade of Mackenzie Weegar on defense, I think is a really good move for the Flames. They didn't get a lot of attention, obviously, but I think he has the potential. And this was my first story on Sportsnet.ca, actually, to be the Flames' number one defenseman. He's been one of the best kept secrets in the league for the past few years in Florida. I think the Oilers could also be that team. Of course, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Evander Kane had a great season on the ice, specifically. They have Jack Campbell now in goal. He defected from the Maple Leafs and signed with the Oilers. I think he's an upgrade over Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. We'll see how he holds up, but I do think they shored up their goaltending a little bit. And I think an argument could be made for the Minnesota Wild. Less of an argument than the Flames and the Oilers, but I do think Minnesota is a really good team. To me, I think the Predators are probably, if you're asking me to rank the teams in the West, I mean, maybe they're 4 or 5 at best.
Which at least does mean, though, you feel pretty confident this is a playoff team then.
Yes, I do feel better about their chances of being a playoff team this year than I did at this time last year when I said they were going to miss the playoffs. And I do think the additions of... Yes, I did.
Incorrectly. Correctly. That's yes. Right. Thank you for reminding me.
Yes, I think Ryan McDonagh and Nino Niederreiter will certainly help. I think McDonagh, especially over the past couple... As he's gotten older, McDonagh has really settled into a shutdown role, and he's really, really good at it. And I think potentially playing him with Matthias Ekholm gives the Predators a true shutdown pairing that they really haven't had since P.K. Subban and Ekholm, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I think that, you know, with all due respect to Alex Carrier, who I thought did an admirable job playing that role with Matthias Ekholm, Ryan McDonagh, been there, done that. I think he's much, much better suited for that role. And Niederreiter, look, the second line was an issue last year, specifically on the wings with Luke Cunningham and Ellie Tolvanen. Niederreiter, I did this earlier, crunched the numbers. Niederreiter scored as many goals on his own last year as Tolvanen and Cunningham combined. So I do think that Niederreiter will help. Clearly, he has a good relationship with Ryan Johansson, teammates long ago in junior. They seem to be happy to be playing with each other again. They combined
scored
on a goal
last night
against the Lightning last night. The other side of that line will be interesting. I think we all assume that Philip Tomasino is going to get that first shot at playing on the right wing of that line, and I think that could be good. But yeah, do I feel better about them this time this year than I did at this time last year? Yes. But a lot of skepticism still remains, and this is a question that we can get into at some point, because I would love to know what it would take for Predators fans to feel better about the direction of this franchise, because we know what it was like in May. It was as low as it's been since you and I have been here, you know, 6-7 years. I wonder what it would take. Does winning one playoff round, which they haven't done since 2018, does winning one playoff round this year make people feel better about the direction of this team? Or is it going to take more than that? I think that's a really interesting question that I would love to hear, you know, from listeners of, if they'd like to chime in.
Yes, that's a good call. Well, hit us up on the phone or text line, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCounty.com. When we come back, I also want to talk about an interesting comment from John Hines last night that makes me wonder a little bit about something I thought was a lock. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex, Road 125, 106.3 The Game.
Hey, Robbie Stanley here, and you could start NFL Week 4 off the right way with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or already have an account. You'll get free bets back if your Thursday night same-game parlay doesn't hit. NFL same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payday. Really interesting game coming up between Cincinnati and Miami. I like Jalen Waddle over on yards. I like Ja'Marr Chase over on yards and a Ja'Marr Chase anytime touchdown as well. But take it any way you want to take it. Build your own or choose from one of the popular same-game parlays pre-built for you in FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. However you want to play, you can bet the NFL on with a no-sweat same-game parlay. Just sign up with promo code ROB if you don't already have an account. If you do already have an account, you're all set. Just sign up and see what you've got. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. 3-plus legs, minimum $1 bet required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. A max free bet of $5. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Tune in to the College Football Game of the Week on 102.5, 106.3 The Game tomorrow as Alabama takes on Arkansas, 2:30 p.m. That's a big one. College Football Game of the Week brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports and Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, Hillside Medical Game Studio. If you'd like to join us in the discussion on the phone or text line, driven by WilsonCounty.com, 615-737-1025, talking Preds, and one, talking about their place in the Western Conference, which I do believe, Vingan, is, I do believe it could be right up there and contending to be the second-best team. But, yeah, it would take a whole bunch of things to break their way. You know, I was interested, you just have no love for the Blues, huh? No love for the Blues? Eh?
Yeah, look, they're a good team too. I don't know. Maybe I overlook them. because they are a very good team.
They're just boring, but they're good.
Yeah, they don't generate a lot of headlines. They did have some major signings this summer. They re-signed Robert Thomas and I believe Jordan Kyrou as well, too. I believe identical contracts. And they have what the Predators are lacking. And that's something that we've talked about, you and me, and just in general. You know, the lack of a young, game-changing player on this team. You know, a lot like the teams that win, they have those players. The Predators could have those players. But they none have emerged. You know, maybe it's Tomasino, and you wanted to talk about this a little bit. So, you know, if Philip Tomasino gets to play on the Predators' second line, presumably with Nino Niederreiter and Ryan Johansson, maybe he's a breakout candidate this year, gets a lot more ice time, plays with more talented line mates. With all due respect to his line mates last year, the likes of Michael McCarron and Nick Cousins, you know, playing with Ryan Johansson and Nino Niederreiter is a bit of an upgrade. Maybe he breaks out a little bit, but it all depends on where he ultimately plays. But you said that you wanted to – you mentioned that John Hines said something interesting last night that you wanted to get into.
Well, a couple things interesting from last night. One, Kevin Lankinen, 30-save shutout, and he's looked good. You know, Kevin Lankinen, obviously the numbers were very bad. Now, not just the traditional numbers playing for a terrible team. You take those with a grain of salt, but the underlying numbers were bad. Kevin Lankinen, it was kind of a puzzling move. I think a lot of people thought when they signed him, he looked good last night. And so, I mean, I think it's encouraging on that front. Preds win 2-0. Of course, that game moved from Florida to here because of Hurricane Ian. But another thing that was interesting last night, a comment, and this is Alex Doherty, A to Z Sports, tweeted this out, that Hines said, on that Niederreiter Johansson line, that quote, we're still looking for a winger to add there, end quote. Now, this is also the time for coaches when they're asked about, especially things involving young players, to say things like, yeah, basically like, hey, let's see someone earn it, right? So I guess it's not like I wouldn't necessarily overreact to him not saying Philip Tomasino's got that spot locked up and he's going to be great this year and, you know, 60 points incoming. But I guess it's a little surprise. I guess I've looked at that spot as kind of his. Because, I mean, who else is going to take that spot? Now, Eli Tolvanen, maybe at some point could try to – but I feel like Eli Tolvanen – when you talk about breakout players, I feel like Eli Tolvanen and Dante Fabbro are both guys who are still here but probably looking at, you know, like reduced roles at this point. I mean, Tanner Jeannot has already broken out. I mean, to me, you keep that line together. I'm a believer in that, keeping that herd line together. So the breakout candidate is Tomasino.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too much to read into that, you know, those few words from John Hines in terms of how they're looking at Tomasino in this lineup?
I don't think it's breaking news or anything like that. I do think that, you know, we know what 2/3 of that line is going to be. And I think we would all assume that Philip Tomasino will ultimately get that job, unless someone just comes out of nowhere to take it from him. I agree with the idea of Eli Tolvanen. I feel like Eli Tolvanen needs to work himself back up to that role. He's had his chances there. It's largely been disappointing. I think he's got to kind of move back down the proverbial ladder and work his way back up. And I would agree about keeping Tanner Jeannot where he is, specifically because Jeannot and Niederreiter have similar players. They share similar characteristics. I think having someone who has a bit of a different game than Niederreiter on the other wing would be more beneficial than having, you know, two guys that, you know, dominate on the forecheck and in front of the net.
Who has the higher upside as a player? I mean, we understand that Tolvanen, very disappointing season last season, and frankly, all but about 6 weeks of his career with the Preds has been, you know, kind of underwhelming. But who, Tolvanen or Tomasino?
Who do I think has the higher ceiling?
Yes.
I think Tomasino, mostly because Tolvanen's not an old player. Was he 24, 23, 24? Yeah. So he still has a lot of room to grow, but having considering how many games he's played in the NHL, you wonder how much more room there is to grow. The fact that Tomasino is a few years younger gives me more confidence that he can develop into the kind of player that maybe they thought Tolvanen would be from a production standpoint.
And to your point, they need that. I mean, this team is heavily dependent on grizzled veterans. They're not like, you know, too long in the tooth, but a lot of guys who are right around that, you know, late 20s, early 30s range, and you need more, you know, you need more fresh blood, young players who, you know, are going to be driving the bus soon. To your question, Adam, Samantha on the text line driven by WilsonGuyana.com says, I think getting out of the first round would make me feel better about the direction of the team. We have to get farther than we have last couple seasons. I would also like to see Saros get off to a better start and be hot right out of the gate. Samantha and Brentwood.
Okay. I think
a playoff series win would be big.
Yes, which is funny because I think people around here took that for granted for a little while because it just happened and it was expected, and now that it hasn't happened in a long time.
I guess they won at least one series for what, 4 straight years?
Yes, because in 2015 they lost in the first round, 2016 they lost in the second round.
That's right. No, I'm wrong. So for 3 straight years they won. Yeah, 15 was the loss of the Blackhawks, that was the first round.
Right. Yes. But and they made it
16, 17, 18.
Yes, so 3 consecutive years of at least one series win, and
I mean it's been a while.
It has been a while for a team that considers itself, a contender, even though most people probably don't.
Right. So that's the thing. It's like you said, we've gone through all this. I don't know that I agree with you that like last year, like May was the lowest. I mean, look, you think about this. Like, they were, I think, close to being blown up early in the 2021
season. Yeah, I would
say
the only thing that came close.
Or the end of LaViolette.
The only thing I think that came close in my mind was where they were after, you know, half a season during the COVID-shortened season when they were near the bottom of the league.
Yeah. We're all talking about who's getting Ekholm. Like, where's Ekholm going to be traded?
Right.
Right.
I just think, you know, the public confidence in the team in general, I think is very low right now, and I think it's going to take them doing something. I don't want to say special, like I don't think they need to go on another 2017 like run here or anything, but it's going to take them doing something significant in the postseason, I think, to win back a lot of disillusioned fans.
But I do think some of those fans are excited to some extent about Niederreiter and McDonough, right?
Yeah, for sure.
They're a better team. Real quick, Nate, on the text line, how long do you give Tolvanen and Adam? You can't just keep cutting bait with younger players and have them bust out elsewhere, or is there a bigger underlying problem with what's happening?
Yeah, I'm not giving up on Eli Tolvanen, but he might end up being a, you know, third line, maybe second line guy who gets you 15 goals a year. Maybe he becomes a power play specialist because we know he has a great shot, and that's not changing. You know,
yeah, I feel like power play two this year, he should produce on that.
Right. I mean, there are worse things you can be than a power play specialist, but I'm just getting to a point where I'm starting to wonder, like, is this what he is? And if that is the case, it's disappointing considering what we thought they were getting when he came over.
We'll talk more Preds later, but next on Robbie and Rex Road with Adam Vingan in for Robbie, we're going to go back to the Titans and talk maybe some of the deep cuts to look for Sunday. Coming up, Rex, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.